Hi, everyone, and welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Sophia Simonello.
And I'm Nick Rohrkraut.
And today we have a mega episode for you. We will be recapping Venice, Telluride, and TIFF, and giving a little preview of our favorite, the New York Film Festival. I'm excited to dig into this, talk about the award winners, the reception, and all of the films that we're excited for as we head into another Oscar season.
Yeah, last week we talked about a lot of releases coming throughout the fall into the winter, and we avoided a lot of these films that we knew we would be talking about a lot of throughout the award season. So we're finally getting to those. And some of those are even repeats from Cannes earlier in the year. So I think it will be fun to see which of those will prevail in terms of what we're talking about with the Oscars and big award winners there that maybe show up elsewhere, including at New York, which is kind of a culmination for all of the festivals for us. And I'm interested to hear about your experience at Telluride, what you saw there. And again, if there are certain movies that you really think I should see that were there that are in New York that I haven't seen. And I really haven't seen anything this year. It's kind of like going into this episode not really knowing what to say about these movies because I just don't know yet. And it makes me feel so vulnerable in a way because last year I was at Cannes and knew a little bit about the actress race and certain categories in that respect. But now I'm like, I don't know. You've seen Anora. I haven't seen anything yet. I'm just waiting for New York, which is this week and next week. So I'm just ready to dive in. Like, this is kind of what we live for every October.
I'm so excited. I was at Trader Joe's over the weekend and got a box of granola bars. I like stocked up on my snacks for between screenings because it's difficult to eat meals sometimes when you're watching so many movies back to back. So I'm very prepared. I made my list, absolutely ready to go. But I think you're in the position that most of our listeners are in. Most people haven't seen any of these movies. I think that sometimes, you know, in the bubble on Twitter, Instagram, or wherever, if you're listening to people covering the Oscar race, it seems like everyone is in line for these movies or they're talking about early buzz, but that is not the norm. Most people will see these movies in October, November, December. So don't worry about that. I feel like this will be fun to just go through. But yeah, I think I have a really good idea of what you'll like, but there are a few that I've seen that I actually can't wait to hear your reaction to because I just don't know. But diving into Venice, you've been to the Venice Film Festival before. This is a competitive festival, so they have films that premiere out of competition and in competition in different sections of the festival. So the big prize here is the Golden Lion, which went to The Room Next Door from Pedro Almodovar, which I think was a surprise at the festival. We'll talk about this a little bit, given the mixed response, but this film is going everywhere. So it was also at Toronto. It'll be at New York Film Festival, Mill Valley, Hamptons, London Film Festival. We'll try to stay away from acronyms so that you guys can follow along easily. But that film's going everywhere. We'll see it at New York. The Grand Jury Prize went to Vermilio from Maura Del Perro. This was also at TIFF. The Silver Lion went to The Brutalist from Brady Corbett. This is a major film of the festival season. I think it's shaping up to be the big one or be that big epic that people are talking about really positively. This also premiered at TIFF and will be at New York Film Festival. Best Actress, as we discussed last week, went to Nicole Kidman for Baby Girl. Best Actor went to Vincent Lindon for The Quiet Son. We talked about him a few years ago with Titan. The Special Jury Prize went to April, which I think he's another critical favorite of the festival. Also went to TIFF. I'm excited to see that in New York. Best Screenplay went to I'm Still Here, which also has a healthy festival run, going to TIFF, New York Film Festival, Mill Valley, London, San Sebastian. And our tributes went to Peter Weir and Sigourney Weaver. So that's how the competition shaped up. Our jury president was Queen Isabelle Huppert. And we'll talk about her a little bit as we get into some of our listener questions at the end. But I think there were a few big takeaways from Venice heading into the Oscar race that we should talk through. The first is that The Brutalist, which went into the festival without a distributor, was picked up by A24 for around $10 million. A24 now has three Best Actor contenders with Adrian Brody, Daniel Craig, and Colman Domingo. So we have a previous winner in Adrian Brody, a previous nominee in Colman Domingo, and someone who hasn't been nominated before in Daniel Craig. What do you think about The Brutalist, the reception to it, and about A24 picking it up?
The Brutalist is one of those movies that we knew nothing about. No one had screened. We didn't even have like insider info of initial reports or anything. So that was one going into the festivals and really through our fantasy draft, if you listen back to that, of not knowing, just being too skeptical. The only details we knew were 3.5 hour epic movie by the director who made Vox Lux. Like that was my interpretation of it. And I was weary, but then every single review, I have not seen one poor review about this movie. And just the comparisons to The Godfather Part Two, There Will Be Blood, these epic movies that stand the test of time, and people saying that Brady Corbett as director has solidified himself in the most prolific of directing feats. And it's just like, how do you even process this kind of a movie? And I will say, I'm very excited to see it. By the time I could even book tickets for New York, the screenings that I could have gone to were all standby. And I'm like, great, this is the movie I think of every festival.
Mm-hmm.
And I was maybe hoping for a prize out of TIFF. That didn't happen. And we'll talk about that festival later. But I'm expecting to love this. The only problem with this is, now is it overhyped because of how well it has been doing, or expecting something so grand from my experience? But I'm very excited for this. The other one you mentioned, Queer, both of these happened after Venice, which was interesting because all of that too was, okay, now what is A24 going to push, or what were they going to push before?
Mm-hmm.
Being Sing Sing and Colman Domingo. And it's like, now how are they going to distribute their money and their forces with pushing for all of these movies and actors? They just can't do it. Mm-hmm. But that's going to be the big question throughout award season, is where the tides are turning and whose narrative is best.
Yeah. And each season has its own unique flavor and really combination of people and films and the responses to them. So it's interesting that they have three actors in the mix, but I will say that it's not like they all can win Best Actor or anything, but we think back just a few years ago, A24 picked up all four acting wins with Everything Everywhere All at Once and The Whale. So it's not impossible for them to run multiple successful campaigns. And yeah, it is really tough that I didn't just stick to my guns and pick The Brutalist in the draft, because I had it in so many categories, but we just didn't know as much. And I've been talking about Adrian Brody in actor for months, thinking that this is a possibility given how similar the role is to what he did years prior in The Pianist, at least on paper. So I can't wait to see this. One of my most anticipated movies for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think, though, like if it's getting compared to things like There Will Be Blood in The Godfather Part Two, I also saw a Tar comparison. But something like Sing Sing, I feel like A24 needs to figure out what's going on with this movie's release, because I think if it gets in front of people, they will really respond to it. And Colman mm-hmm. Domingo's performance and just the overall heart of the film, I feel like that's something that audiences will connect with maybe more than a 3.5 hour epic with an intermission.
Well, yeah, and it's not just Best Actor. It's Best Supporting Actor, Best Supporting Actress. And we have Felicity Jones in The Brutalist. Also Guy Pearce, who mm-hmm. a lot of people feel like he's due. That's another question we'll have later. And then also in Sing Sing, Clarence Macklin. So yeah, it's not like The Brutalist may win in every acting category, but it has multiple opportunities,
mm-hmm.
as does A24. I don't think the responses to Queer have been as high. Am I still really excited to see this movie? And I think for reasons that people didn't like it, absolutely.
Yes.
Like going on this psychedelic journey, I want Luca Guadagnino's 3-hour plus cut of this and just to like sit in this world, just feeling things. Not so much the like Omar Apollo, Drew Starkey part of it, but just like knowing that Guadagnino is so good at these mood pieces. Mm-hmm. And this is so different for him in this William Burroughs adaptation that I am still very curious about what this is going to be.
Yeah, I can't wait. The second I heard Surrealist, I got really excited because Guadagnino is such a unique director, and the way that he tells stories, especially around eroticism, fascinate me. I watched A Bigger Splash again recently and had the best time with it. I think I appreciated it even more post-Challengers. So I'm very excited for Queer. We also, speaking of, you know, train of thought here, A Bigger Splash, Tilda Swinton, The Room Next Door. How are we feeling about mm-hmm. The Room Next Door? I think maybe in relation to the past performance of Almodovar films at the Oscars. And we got a little update here via Variety that Julianne Moore and Tilda Swinton will both be run in lead.
I think based on the responses, they both could definitely get in. I'm curious on the runtime. I haven't really looked into that or seen much about that in terms of who is in there more. But I think them being previous Oscar winners, Julianne has won Venice before too, of having this grand presence on screen. And it's just relating so much to viewers. I think a lot of people have experienced death in their lives, and this sounds like a really interesting way to process that and confront that. And I think these are two actresses that have spoken about it so well during press interviews, and I think are the ones that ultimately I would want to see on screen in a movie about this and like this. So I think they could both get in, very possible. And the Academy appreciates Almodovar. I think this has multiple opportunities in screenplay, actress, maybe even picture, cinematography. We've seen some lovely stills and a trailer from this movie. So how do you feel about it in terms of its possibilities?
Well, I love his films and both of these actresses. Julianne Moore and Tilda Swinton, they can do no wrong, especially when working with a director like Almodovar. I think on paper for me, Tilda Swinton's role feels more Academy or awards friendly. She's dying in the movie, and I feel like the Academy loves that if we look back historically. And everything that I've read about the movie, I've tried to stay away from reading full reviews so far, but I think that this is something that really could be a critical hit. It's just interesting that it won the Golden Lion because I think I expected it to be The Brutalist just based on initial reactions. But I think that what's interesting too is that Sony Pictures Classics in actress has a similar battle that A24 has in actor, because now they have Tilda Swinton and Julianne Moore in lead, Saoirse Ronan for The Outrun, which I'll talk about a little bit in our Telluride section. And then they also have this movie, I'm Still Here, with Fernanda Montenegro, which also was at Venice. So that's a lot. But Sony Pictures Classics is really good with acting campaigns, especially if the movie is solid and it's not The Sun, because that was an uphill battle that not even that distributor could climb.
And with Fernanda Montenegro, she was nominated in Walter Salles' previous movie, Central Station. So I think that was a big feat for that movie at the time. And the fact that she's back, I think, in a supporting role here, but still that could give the lead actress, Fernanda Torres, some power in the acting category as well. So yeah, there's a lot of potential here. I do like Sony Pictures Classics. I mentioned last week that I was maybe expecting one of the actresses or both of them to share actress instead of Nicole Kidman, who won for Baby Girl. My question also is, because you've seen Maria, who is really the one that I was expecting, Angelina Jolie, to potentially win here, what this could mean for really any four of these actresses if this win for Nicole Kidman really helps her? Like, is she now one of the top five to be an actress? Or where does this put Angelina in that conversation, since that movie didn't win any prizes at Venice?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of reasons why Nicole won, and maybe what it means for Angelina and for the actress category. Best actress this year is stacked. It's where we like it to be. We have all these performances that people are really loving that also are from actresses who dominate their films, which is really cool. So they're not just wife roles or anything like that that we see sometimes in Best Actress. Nicole Kidman winning, I think part of that is also Isabelle Huppert's taste. That woman, she loves an erotic thriller. And I also feel that based on what I've heard about Nicole's performance, that just feels like something that her jury might, I don't know, be more keen on. And with Angelina Jolie, that performance is really incredible. I loved it. It's actually my favorite of the three Pablo Larraín ladies. Like, I like it more than Natalie Portman's performance in Jackie or Kristen Stewart's in Spencer. I really connected with her in the film, but that movie is a bit more polarizing than Baby Girl, it seems, even just based on the initial reaction. So I think that still, when it comes down to it, Jolie's performance is very industry friendly and she has a great narrative. Not to say that Nicole Kidman doesn't. I think she does too. I think they can both get in. It'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out. But I think Nicole's in my top five right now. It'll be interesting to see. I think we have to consider her win here in the Volpe Cup seriously, even though Kaylee Spaney, last year's winner, didn't get in.
Yeah, I mean, lately it's been a good stat to count on the Volpe Cup winner being in, but I just don't see this movie being Academy friendly at all. And maybe Huppert and the jury were like, you know, let's just go for it. Let's do it. Why not? I don't know if it's necessarily a career win, but I've seen comparisons to Eyes Wide Shut and Nicole's performance. So I don't know. Even if it was just a fun thing, it will be even more fun to talk about Nicole Kidman and this movie and Harris Dickinson throughout the award season. I'm not mad about it.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk about it all season. Hopefully, I think we'll both really like it. It seems like something we'd be into. And you mentioned Maria, but we also had some titles that didn't win awards, but that we'll be talking about this season. Queer, you mentioned, didn't win any awards, but we'll be seeing that at New York. September 5th, I'll talk about that in a minute when we get into the Telluride section, because I did see that film there. And Joker, Folie à Deux. Whatever is happening there, it did not, as we talked about last week, premiere, I think, as positively as Joker, which won the Golden Lion as part of Martel's jury. So its awards appearance depends on so many things. So we'll just keep an eye on it and we'll see how it goes throughout the season. Getting into Telluride, this was my second Telluride Film Festival this year. It's interesting because my first time going, the strike was on, so there weren't actors there. It was mostly filmmakers, and I think it still had a similar feel this year, but we did have big talent there that I'll talk about when we get to some of the questions we have. But Telluride isn't a competitive festival, but they do silver medallions every year, which is the high honor of the festival. Those went to Jacques Audiard, the director of Amelia Perez, Saoirse Ronan, who was there with The Outrun, and Thelma Schoonmaker. It was so amazing seeing Thelma Schoonmaker walking around the festival. I had seen her before here at Q&As, but there was just something about seeing her walking down the street that was just really cool. She's such a legend. And for the Telluride lineup too, you actually don't know the lineup until the day before the festival, which is always interesting because we always are making guesses and trying to figure out, you know, what surprises will we have. I had this whole grand theory that Nosferatu would be going because Werner Herzog is a friend of the festival and he made a version of Nosferatu. It was truly conspiratorial thinking, but that film didn't go there. We're probably going to have to wait a really long time for it, and that's fine. But you can glean information from other festivals and their premiere designations of what's going to be there. So even though it's a surprise lineup, there weren't a ton of surprises, but major world premieres we had there were Conclave, Nickel Boys, Saturday Night, Piece by Piece, The Piano Lesson, The End. Those are just a few. And then we also have Cannes and Sundance carryovers and a few Venice carryovers too. Our Venice carryovers were Maria and September 5th, Sundance, we had A Real Pain, The Outrun, Will and Harper. Cannes, we had Anora, Bird, Emilia Perez, Misericordia, The Seed of the Sacred Fig, All We Imagine as Light.
Back to the Silver Medallions.
Mm-hmm.
Jacques Audiard, Saoirse Ronan obviously have projects here. Did Thelma have a project? Like, is she working on a doc or anything? Or did she talk about her next projects?
Yeah, so she was there with Made in England, which is the documentary about Michael Powell, her late husband of Powell and Pressburger. So I had actually seen that here in New York prior to the festival, so I didn't go again. But I did go see her talk. And there's this little park where they do outdoor talks, and she was sitting out there giving a talk. So I had to go stop by for a little bit.
I love that.
It's a very chill, low-key festival. Mm-hmm. Getting there is, it's like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. But once you're there, it's such an easy festival to navigate. You just see people in line behind you at a coffee shop, or just have very casual conversations with people on the street. Like, there aren't a lot of, I don't know, there are no red carpets. I didn't see anyone taking a lot of selfies with people, which I always find just kind of embarrassing. So it was just nice that everyone was just kind of there enjoying the festival together. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So how many of these premieres or films from other festivals did you end up seeing?
My total count for the festival, which is like around 3.5 days, it's a short one, was 10. So I didn't do the pack my days in with 4 or 5 movies. I, you know, took some time to write and enjoy the festival, to go to some parties, but 10 felt like a good count. So of these, I saw, let me go through my diary here. Conclave, Nickel Boys, The Piano Lesson, The End, Saturday Night, Anora, Emilia Perez, The Outrun, Maria, and September 5th. And some of those decisions were because I was writing reviews. Others were because I wanted to wait until New York Film Festival, because if I knew something was going to be there and it just didn't really fit into my schedule, I decided to save it. So things like The Seed of the Sacred Fig and All We Imagine as Light, which I can't wait to see. Same with Misericordia. I wanted to wait until New York Film Festival because I knew I would get to see them there.
I think my most anticipated of the festival was The End, just because, again, that was one of those movies we hadn't seen much of. I think maybe during Telluride or around that time, we got the still of Tilda.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't know what to make of it, but it was neon. So I was hoping that maybe it was going to be this sleeper hit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What were your reactions to that movie, musical?
Okay. So I was really excited for this. This was actually my most anticipated of the festival, just because I say this every single episode. I feel like we say this every single episode. I love Tilda Swinton. I love strange, out there movies. And I think Joshua Oppenheimer, his documentaries, The Look of Silence and The Act of Killing, are fascinating. They really change what we think of. We think of nonfiction filmmaking. They're very out there. And he brings some of those ideas into The End. But for me, I just could not get on this movie's wavelength at all. It's supposed to be a golden age musical. And I think at times it stretches into that. And when it does, it's really beautiful. Like, he plays with the idea of painted backdrops, but they're just the paintings that are in this family's bunker. So if you aren't familiar with The End, this is a musical starring George Mackay, Moses Ingram, Michael Shannon, and Tilda Swinton. And I would say that Moses Ingram is the only one who can really sing. George Mackay can sometimes. Michael Shannon and Tilda Swinton, they're not trained singers, which I think can work sometimes. It just depends on what you're really going for in the movie and how well you execute it. And Michael Shannon and Tilda Swinton are married. They have a son, George Mackay, who has been raised in this bunker at the end of the world. Michael Shannon was this energy tycoon who's partially responsible for the climate crisis. Tilda Swinton is this ex Bolshoi ballerina, their son, who I think George Mackay actually gives a really great performance in this movie as this really sheltered person who has spent 20 some years underground. And their bunker, mm-hmm. just so everyone knows, is not what you think of when you think of an underground bunker. It looks like an Upper East Side penthouse. There are mm-hmm. paintings everywhere. The colors are beautiful. The production design is great. I think a lot of the film's technical elements are really strong, but I was just very annoyed the entire time. It's very long. It's over 2 hours, and you can feel every minute of it. I think that some people will really click into this and will really like it, but this was one of the disappointments of the fest for me, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those movies where you just think, you could say, well, that's the point, you know, about some of the decisions that were made. But for me, it doesn't really matter if it's the point. If I don't enjoy it, if I don't like the execution, then I don't like it. And that's fine too, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there will be some people who, like I said, will connect with it and will find deeper meaning in it. But I lost my patience very quickly.
Interesting. I'm still intrigued. I'm sure I'll see this in December once it comes out.
Yeah.
Maybe less of an Oscars player.
This is one I'm very excited to hear your opinion on, because I actually don't know where you'll land. Some of it reminded me of La La Land. Some of it reminded me of Annette, but it's very repetitive. So I'm curious what you think.
I feel like I could land either way.
Mm-hmm.
Truly.
Very much so.
What was your favorite of the fest, or favorites?
It's hard. I think my overall favorite was Nickel Boys. We talked about it a bit last week on our fall movie preview, but this is just such an audacious film. It's unlike anything I've ever seen. It's a movie I'm hesitant to recommend to a lot of people because it's very, very challenging and different. And I feel like you will know within the first 10 minutes if it's going to work for you or not. And if the first person POV style that Ramel Rouse uses works for you, then you're in for a cinematic treat. If not, if it's a little bit more difficult to click into, I don't know how you'll feel. And I think there will be people who will struggle with that. But I think it's a pretty brilliant adaptation of the Colson Whitehead novel. And it really stretches, I think, what adaptation can be. And I think that's really beautiful. And the performances are just amazing. Brandon Wilson and Ethan Harise, who play the two boys, Elwood and Turner, they're such discoveries. I love them. Those performances are really tricky because of how Jomo Frey and Ramel Rouse shoot the film. And Anjanou Ellis-Taylor, also just, heartbreaking. Because of how it's shot, too, all of her scenes are captured in close-up. It's like Jonathan Demme or Barry Jenkins and how that feels, that weight on you, or Paul Thomas Anderson a little bit. So it's like she's talking to you. That's the feel that you have when you're watching it. So it's a really intense and moving film. So I would say that for me is the standout. And then the other one would be Anora, which I am really excited for you to see because I just loved that movie so much. And it was such a surprise because I'm so all over the place with Baker's filmography. And I went into it just thinking, oh, really? Like, this is going to be the American film that won the Palme d'Or after The Tree of Life? This better be good. It kind of went into it a little cynically. And I was just, the cynicism left me by the time it started.
Well, about Nickel Boys first, I think the POV also plays into the novel and how you read that book. So I think people of the book, from how you make it sound, I am really excited for this. And really because it's so different than anything we've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And again, all of those stills that we've gotten just visually out of this world. Anjanou plays one of their mothers.
She plays Elwood's grandmother.
Oh, okay. So similar, I was maybe going to compare it to Dee Dee and Joan Chen's performance, but I think any sort of like motherly bond or role, I hope will play very well with the Academy. Talk about The Tree of Life, Lord. Yeah. I mean, every shot. So I can't wait.
Yeah.
And with Anora, It just sounds like this is his most crowd-pleasing film that he's made so far. I know people really like The Florida Project or Red Rocket, or, you know, it's more of a niche thing. But I think with Anora, this could really break him out into general audiences really knowing who he is, besides just being an awards player.
Mm-hmm.
And you talking about how this is a screwball comedy and just things that, again, I didn't expect from it. I'm also very excited to see this at New York, and with a release soon after by Neon, I think, mm-hmm. yeah, this could be a really big hit with just general audiences too, knowing Mikey Madison from other properties as well.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
There were two others that we have kind of talked about on the pod and off that I feel like have gotten so many mixed reviews, and I think maybe coming from you that weren't as high, like I understand that, but then seeing 5-star reviews on Letterboxd, and these are for Conclave and Saturday Night, which is funny.
Uh-huh.
I mean, for so many reasons, but
yeah,
partly because movies like this that are divisive show up at the Oscars, whether we like it or not. So I'm very curious how these will play throughout the season and as they premiere worldwide, but I'm scared for how I will feel about them as well.
Well, okay. I think that you'll like Saturday Night, and I think that you will also probably like Conclave. The thing about Conclave is that I think I will like it more on rewatch, maybe, if I'm just leaning into the fact that it is fun. It's very funny, and partially what made me dislike it when I saw it was just the sound and the score. It sounds like an action movie or a war movie. It is just so intense. It's like, and I don't know if it's just the sound that was in the theater where I saw it. I don't know mm-hmm. how it would play at home, but it is just, it made me have a headache a little bit. And it's that Volker Bertelmann who won score for
mm-hmm.
All Quiet on the Western Front. It is just like that intense strings. It's very funny how it's used too, because it's really obvious. Like if a character is coming around the corner, you'll just hear this like bum bum, like big thing. It's just so intense. So it's just kind of funny, and it adds to that quality.
Yeah.
I don't really think that this movie will be divisive. I think it's divisive maybe with me and with other people, but I think when most general audiences see it, they will like it. It's also what I didn't mention last week. It's so timely. They talk about American politics all the time. It is like they're talking about the DNC, but they're electing a pope. And they make comments like that in the script that make it feel like an episode of The West Wing, too. So I think general audiences will really like it.
Hmm. And my other question here is Isabella Rossellini.
Oh, my God.
Is this a possibility? How is she?
She's great. She has nothing to do. At one point in the movie, I wondered if she would actually have a single line, because it takes a really long time to get more from her. But she makes a meal out of nothing. There's a moment where she does this little like curtsy bow where I wanted to clap. It's a pretty thankless role. But there is a world I see where supporting actress is the way that it is. You know, now Tilda and Julianne are out of supporting. There are spots open where all of a sudden she is totally, to me, the type of nominee who misses every precursor and shows up at the Oscars. It's like a Judi Dench in Belfast.
Well, I mean, especially if we're talking about this movie all season. Absolutely.
And I wouldn't hate it. That's the thing. But I think overall, like performance wise, Ralph Fiennes will be the one that people are talking about. He's the lead.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very quiet performance. And then supporting wise, people should take John Lithgow out of predictions. I do not think that's happening, but Stanley Tucci could actually happen.
Hmm.
That's possible.
Okay.
I liked him a lot in it. And Saturday Night, I think people have a lot of fun with. It's hard too, because I don't know if I enjoyed it more because I'm not an SNL person. Like I wonder how people who love SNL will feel about it.
Just heavy performances. I feel like maybe editing or just sound in general.
Yeah.
The score.
Screenplay is possible.
Uh-huh. The other movie that I'm really curious about, because as a recording yesterday, there was news that Paramount's Republic Pictures just acquired September 5. And there have been movies that have covered this 1972 Olympics terrorist attack before. We have Spielberg's Munich, which had 5 Oscar nominations, and then One Day in September, which won documentary in 2000. Mm-hmm. So this movie being covered from a different perspective from the ABC Sports News division in their live coverage of the event. Very curious, because it's also, it seems like high intensity. I mean, obviously very different from Saturday Night, but I was thinking, like, if a movie like this could kick out something like Saturday Night and show up later on in the season in a bigger way.
I really enjoyed this movie, and I feel like a lot of audiences will too. It is a nice 90-minute political thriller. It's very talky and stressful. It's anxiety-inducing in a good way. And it's also, I think it has that surprise quality. I knew nothing about this movie, hardly at all, going into it. I had just heard rumblings that people saw it at Venice, saw that it worked with my schedule and decided to go, and was really pleasantly surprised. Leonie Benesch, who was the lead in The Teacher's Lounge last year, is in it. Mm-hmm. She's great. Peter Sarsgaard and John Magaro are both really good in it. It is one of those movies that I can see people, you know, popping in on like over Thanksgiving or Christmas, or going to see it and just really liking it. And it's a good conversation starter. It's also very timely, and yeah, it's solid and it's 90 minutes. So it's a pretty easy watch, even though it's a difficult subject matter.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds like Broadcast News meets Argo.
Argo is a good comparison, actually.
Mm-hmm. And that was like a big upset
at
the Oscars.
I don't know if it can go that far, but I would say that Argo is a good comparison in terms of tone. Mm-hmm. Argo has a more sweeping conclusion that works in its favor, I think, for voters, whereas this doesn't so much. But yeah, interesting.
Well, we'll be on the lookout for that. Mm-hmm. Let's move into TIFF and talk about some of those winners and tributes. So we just found out the People's Choice Awards yesterday. So the big award went to The Life of Chuck, a movie that we haven't talked about.
We have not.
yet. So I'm very curious how this plays. This is by director Mike Flanagan, who has worked on like The Haunting of Hill House and Dr. Sleep, really in this horror realm. And this is an adaptation of a Stephen King novella, but it's kind of like this Christopher Nolan time jumping drama, not horror. So I'm intrigued by it. I think a lot of people are confused how this will play in the awards conversation. But first runner-up went to Amelia Perez, a movie we've talked about a lot. And then a second runner-up went to Anora, another film we talked about today. Mm-hmm. The Midnight Madness People's Choice Award went to The Substance. And then mentioning documentary first runner-up, because the first prize winner went to a series, so not really something we'll talk about with the Oscars, but first runner-up went to Will and Harper, which we mentioned before, and then also in Song. So I think that could show up in some different ways. The Performer Awards went to Amy Adams and Jarrell Jerome. And the Director Award went to Mike Lee. The Norman Jewison Award, which is a Canadian Career Achievement Award, went to David Cronenberg, who has The Shrouds out this year. And then the Variety Artisan Award went to Camille Delmas and Clement Ducol. And they are the Amelia Perez songwriter and composer. So I think this is interesting because they won the Cannes Soundtrack Award. And again, we've talked about Song with this movie, and this is something we'll bring up again and again. The Jeff Skoll Award in Impact Media went to Angelina Jolie, and the Share Her Journey Groundbreaker Award went to Cate Blanchett. So a lot of names we know and love, Angelina finally showing up in a different way, but we had so many world premieres here that we had been waiting for. Number one on this list, Night Bitch. We also had The Wild Robot, We Live in Time, Hard Truths, The Last Showgirl, Unstoppable, and Eden, which is a movie I didn't hear about until TIFF, which is Ron Howard's latest film with Jude Law and Ana de Armas, apparently giving really, really great performances. So I don't know how this will play into the Oscars or these movies in general, but I think, you know, seeing Pamela Anderson come out of The Last Showgirl and our namesake campaigner award, Jamie Lee Curtis, really promoting her and this movie shows that it's really anybody's game. And I think we could see people that we aren't really expecting later on in certain acting categories, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's interesting about TIFF, Venice, and Telluride is that there aren't too many movies that are getting rapturous responses. It's not like Cannes last year, for instance, where we had Killers of the Flower Moon in May, December, and The Zone of Interest and Anatomy of a Fall, and this, you know, stacked lineup. These feel a bit quieter, and there isn't as much unanimous praise, which I think is exciting because it keeps things really up in the air. The Life of Chuck winning the People's Choice Award, I think, is confusing for people who weren't there because we haven't seen it and have barely heard much about this. It doesn't have U.S. distribution yet. I just remember thinking, oh, a Mike Flanagan movie starring Tom Hiddleston. Okay, I'll watch that when it comes out. I didn't really think anything of it, you know, coming here, but I think that this definitely makes us think about it differently. I mean, last year with TIFF, every single film that was listed for People's Choice, The Boy and the Heron, The Holdovers, and American Fiction, all took home an Oscar. So it's something where it is a stat to think about of the People's Choice winner getting into Best Picture. But this is a little bit different, I think, because it doesn't have a distributor and just kind of came out of nowhere. So we'll see. We'll keep an eye on it. Amelia Perez is the fascinating one to me because have you heard any music from this movie?
Just the trailer.
This is the one that I am most eager for you to see at New York because the more time passes, did not care for it. And I know that that's not a popular opinion. I think a lot of people really love this movie and I understand why, but it didn't work for me. That's not to say there aren't great things in it. I think there are some fantastic performances, but I think people will be on complete opposite ends of the spectrum with this one. So I'm particularly eager for you to see it because I think this might be our split this year because we always have one that I don't like and you really like or the other way around. So it could be this one. But Anora getting second runner up is big. It's that nice, nice slot. Palm d'Or win, places at TIFF, does really well at Telluride. I'm going to read into that because I really like that movie.
Well, they both have big Cannes wins. So I think that speaks to, again, that being in May and now it's mid-September and we're still giving them top prizes. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to continue. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think with the other movies, because we've been on a Best Actress kick and you talked about The Last Showgirl with Pamela Anderson, the premiere of Night Bitch. So this trailer that came out, did you watch the trailer? Because I know you avoid trailers sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I did. It's like this romp, early 2000s comedy.
It kind of does feel like that. And so I'm wondering because it premiered differently at TIFF, but I just still wonder like if Amy Adams could break in. But even if she doesn't, I'm eager to see it. I gotta know, like we talked about last week. And then the other one is Hard Truths, which we will see at New York Film Festival. Got really good reviews, specifically around Marianne Jean-Baptiste and her performance.
I think that's its best chances. We haven't seen Mike Leigh for a long time and won different awards at multiple film festivals, but I'm excited to see her. And after this trailer, this was kind of different than I was expecting too, but a performance that I think I could easily and quickly latch onto.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just from the trailer alone and that very specific, mean, dry British humor, very excited. I love a curmudgeon.
And it's something that has come up over and over again in either talking about movies or seeing reviews is like with The Life of Chuck, you know, it's about hope in this cynical world falling apart, or with Marianne's performance, she's so cynical and she's scared to go outside. So it's like, maybe this is the narrative that comes around this year. There's some good listener questions about that too, but I'm wondering, you know, could we see something upset since we don't have some juggernaut, at least that we know of, that we've seen already?
Yeah. I mean, I think we could. I think that's like, that's what's so exciting about this year so far, is it feels like it can just keep changing. The last TIFF movie I'm really excited for now, based on reactions, is The Wild Robot. Seeing how moved people are by it makes it move to one of my most anticipated. So I'll see that, I think, next week when it comes out in theaters here.
That and We Live in Time just getting, like, instead of 5 stars, 5 teardrop reviews, because they're just crying so much. I'm so excited for both of these. And the responses about the score from The Wild Robot being spectacular. I love that too. So yeah, I can't wait. A lot of these are coming out fairly soon, which makes me very happy.
Yeah, it's going to be a good fall. And speaking of that, getting right into New York Film Festival. I love this festival so much. It just feels like the start of the fall every year, getting to spend so much time up at Lincoln Center. And I think they do such a good job programming the festival with so many international films and movies that were akin or at Venice that we haven't seen yet, documentaries. So they have the main slate, spotlight, currents, and revivals. Those are the big sections. So there's really something for everyone. And the opening night film there will be Nickel Boys. The centerpiece is The Room Next Door. And closing night, we have Blitz, Steve McQueen's new movie that we haven't talked about yet because its world premiere will be at the BFI London Film Festival. And then its North American premiere will be at New York. So let's run through a couple that we haven't talked about yet, or maybe that we have that we're just really excited to see here in the city.
We've talked about I'm Still Here Today. I cannot wait for this. I'm curious if this will be Brazil's international feature submission to the Oscars, but it's also kind of anti-Brazil. So I don't know how that's going to play, but it's about a mother searching for her missing husband, who's a congressman during the Brazilian military dictatorship that happened from the 60s to the 80s. So a lot of these that I'm mentioning are international or just politically charged. And I think that's something that always sparks a lot of conversation, which we usually have at New York Films.
So I mentioned The Brutalist already. I'm so excited to see that. That is like top of my list for the rest of the year. Then I would say All We Imagine as Light, the film by Payal Kapadia, which did really well at Cannes. This movie was runner-up, which is the Zone of Interest spot from last year. And just everything I've heard about this film, it just sounds really, really beautiful in its exploration of this relationship between these two nurses in Mumbai. So I don't know too much about it, which is exciting too. I try to go into some of these knowing the least possible amount of information. We mentioned Hard Truths already. I can't wait for The Shrouds, the new David Cronenberg, especially just because of the reaction. Seeing that it got really a negative response at Cannes, and then seeing how he basically said that the journalists who didn't understand the conspiracy theory part were stupid. If you watch his press conference, he is not happy about it. But knowing that his wife recently passed away and that this film is a rumination on grief, I think it's going to be possibly really profound. His movies always get very different reactions. So even if there are negative reactions out of Cannes, I'm on board for Cronenberg and can't wait to see it. And then my last one that I'm really excited for is a movie called Grand Tour. This is from Miguel Gomez. And this movie looks stunning. The black and white photography, it's a period drama. So I don't know maybe if that's going to be on your list, but just from the images alone, I'm very intrigued. I don't know much about it. I've just heard very positive things. So I'm excited to go into this one. I think semi-blind.
This one is also Portugal's entry for the International Oscar. It won Best Director at Cannes. The other one you mentioned, All We Imagine as Light, is interesting because this is one of France's finalists for the Oscar. And I'm just like, there are multiple countries involved. I'm curious why France may take this and not India.
Mm-hmm.
Because France has so many too, the Count of Monte Cristo, Misericordia, and Emilia Perez, which I think could be an easy win just because of how much acclaim it's gotten so far. But that's kind of interesting to watch to see what they end up picking. Some other ones that I'm excited for at New York, Happy End. It's this Japanese-American drama about a friendship between teenage friends being tested in a near future, surveilled Tokyo. The director, Neo Sora, also directed the Ryuichi Sakamoto concert films that did really well previously and have played at New York before. The Seed of the Sacred Fig. We briefly mentioned this, but this is Germany's international submission. And this is just fascinating because this won 5 awards at Cannes, including a special award. The director, Rasalouf, fled Iran to Germany after being sentenced to 8 years in prison. It combines real footage of the Iranian protests being suppressed by the government. And again, it's that political piece that centers on a paranoid judge and his family. And then my last one, I'll say Caught by the Tides, which is a Chinese drama that uses footage from 22 years of Jia Zhongke's career. And he's won the Golden Lion before with Still Life and Best Screenplay at Cannes with A Touch of Sin. So lots of award buzz. We'll see how that movie plays. But I'm just excited for these different kinds of films that like blend fiction and nonfiction and going into them, like you said, not knowing much and just kind of being wowed by a different kind of experience.
Yeah, that's the fun thing about New York Film Festival. It's like for me last year, I knew how much you loved Anatomy of a Fall, but I went into it knowing, I think, just the basics and how much people really liked it. And I remember texting you after it, like furiously, like, oh my God, I need to talk about this movie. This was incredible. To the completely unexpected. Like when I saw Evil Does Not Exist, I was completely floored by that movie and was thinking about it for days afterwards. So those are the types of films that go to New York Film Festival. And the best part is we don't even know what we're going to love yet.
Yeah. And there's so many. So I can't wait. Let's get into some listener questions. Starting off, Chelsea, hot as ever. How would the women characters of the Fall Festival films you've screened fare on Survivor?
Okay. So of the ones I have seen. All right. So let's start with Maria. So if we're thinking of characters, Maria Callas would not like Survivor. She would not enter the game. She needs her furs. She needs to be walking around the streets of Paris. She needs her live-in cook. It's not happening. So Maria Callas, she needs a different reality show. Then I would say let's go to Anora. I actually think she could do really well because she's a very resilient character. And I could see her, Chelsea, if you've watched this season, for our Survivor fan listeners, I could see her being like a better version of Abby Maria. And I think though she has that kind of like feisty, intense energy, but she also is very savvy and smart. So I think she could do really well. She also is kind of reminding me of like a Black Widow Brigade member. I think she could have a Parvati-like game too. Then I think thinking of Emilia Perez, I don't think Selena Gomez's character would do very well. I think she would actually play really similarly to Amanda Kimmel, which would be to go really far, make it to the end, but never win. And her heart would get in her way in the end. I'll say that. Then I think that Emilia Perez, I think Carla Sofia Gascon, I think she would also do really well. I think a lot of them would do pretty well that I've seen so far, which I think just speaks to the quality of the female characters that we have. But I can't think of a direct comparison for her of how she would play. But I think that she might, based on what happens in Emilia Perez, have a moment where she has a little bit of an outburst, maybe overreacts, and that gets her sent home. My overall winner, the person though who I think would do the best on Survivor, is actually Zoe Saldana's character in Emilia Perez, the lawyer, because I think that she could hide from people that she's a lawyer. She could be really duplicitous, but she has really good instincts, really good intuition. And I think by the end, when she reveals that she's a lawyer, she could convince the jury to vote for her. Oh, and Saoirse Ronan for the outrun. One more. The part that she would do really well in is the solitude. So in the outrun, she plays a woman who's struggling with an addiction to alcohol. She's an alcoholic who's recovering. And yeah, the isolation of Survivor, like, she could be sent to Exile Island and do really well. Like, she would, I think, really love it, because where she ends up going in this movie is like Exile Island.
I'm curious about Amy Adams and Night Bitch.
Oh my God.
Nicole Kidman and Baby Girl.
Me too.
I think the former probably doing much better than the latter, but I'm curious to see those roles play out.
Our next question comes from Matthew Anderson. With Dee Dee Gardner and Jeremy Kleiner having a pretty good track record of getting films they produce into the Best Picture race, 12 Years a Slave, Selma, The Big Short, Moonlight, Vice, Women Talking, can you see Nickel Boys doing okay enough with Oscar voters and potentially be our front runner for adapted screenplay? I would love that. I don't know yet, though. I'm really curious how voters will respond to this, just because of how different it is. And it's a very, I mean, again, it stretches what we think of when we think of adaptation. So the screenplay itself, like, it doesn't feel as heavily literary as the book does, because he takes a lot of liberties with the book. So I could see purists actually pushing back against it a little bit, but I would hope it can win adapted screenplay. I think it just depends on the film's success overall, but I would love that.
I think it's definitely up there to get a nomination. It's interesting looking at this pairing too. They're also producers on Wolf's coming out soon, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Bob Marley, One Love, and then this documentary that's at New York about the evangelical movement helping Brazil's Bolsonaro, and that's Apocalypse in the Tropics. So I'm curious, you know, not just focusing on Nickel Boys, I think adapted as possible, but like Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, getting into costume or makeup, or Apocalypse, getting into something like documentary. But I think that's an interesting question looking at, you know, their abilities in the Academy. Moving on to some questions from Kenzie, starting off, which festival screening has had the best overall reception?
I would say Anora, because it won the Palme d'Or, and then I think Telluride was the big question mark, because I think the patrons of that festival are people who live in the area or who travel in for it, sometimes like the more conventional fare. But I think it playing really well there, talking to people at the festival and just hearing, I didn't hear one negative thing about that movie, and then seeing that it placed at TIFF, I would say Anora.
Yeah, I had Anora up there. Coming out of TIFF, which are more recent films, but The Wild Robot, even Friendship, this buddy comedy that I don't think is showing up at the Oscars, but people were really loving. And then The Brutalist too, I think, being a new recent favorite. And then Kenzie also asked, what film that is seemingly skipping festivals do you think will still get into the Oscar race?
We didn't even talk about the AFI news about Juror Number 2.
Oh my God.
We'll save that for another time. But I would say A Complete Unknown, the Bob Dylan biopic from James Mangold starring Timothy Chalamet. And then my fun answer is Nosferatu, which is a hope diction, but I still think could happen some places. I have it in cinematography right now.
That costume, multiple possibilities. I have both of those. I also have Gladiator 2. Acting, who knows? Technicals, but I think there are different categories there that we saw Gladiator win that I think this could at least be a contender for. And then so far, we haven't seen Blitz either. And that's at New York. It's coming. But I'm just like, how is this going to play? I don't know. I have hope for Steve McQueen. Clint Eastwood, too, has won Oscars before. It's just like, I don't know. But that movie is coming now that we know for sure. So we will just have to wait and see.
Our next question comes from Therefore I Review. Guy Pearce is overdue for an Oscar win. What are his supporting actor chances for The Brutalist?
They are supposedly high. And I think with like Samuel Jackson missing really high praise from The Piano Lesson, it's definitely a possibility. There's no lock yet here in this category. I think we have a lot of potential. Clarence Macklin, I mentioned earlier. It sounds like his role is meaty enough. And like we haven't seen him in a role like that in a while. I did recently with Alien Covenant. But, you know, it's funny looking back at his filmography that he's been in Best Picture winners like The King's Speech and The Hurt Locker. So this could be the next one.
You know, I think I'll have a better idea when I've seen it, but this is a good type of narrative. And supporting actor is the best category for that oftentimes, supporting actor or actress, for someone who is overdue or who hasn't been recognized but has this really great unexpected turn in a film that's going to perform in a number of categories. So I can see it. I have Kieran Culkin predicted right now as winning supporting actor, but I think it's possible. I think it'd be really cool.
I love this next question from Josie DeMarco. What double features or pairings with older films would you choose for some of the year's upcoming films, including Anora, Conclave, Emilia Perez, Hard Truths, Nickel Boys, The Room Next Door, anything else?
Okay, so I would say of the ones I've seen, so for Anora, I would pick either After Hours or Knights of Cabiria. There's a shot in Anora that's also in Knights of Cabiria, which is really cool. That, of course, is the Federico Fellini film from 1957. Then I would say for Nickel Boys, I would pick The Defiant Ones, also from the 50s, from 1958. This is the Sidney Poitier movie directed by Stanley Kramer. Once you see Nickel Boys, you will understand why I chose that. Mm-hmm. For Conclave, you're going to love my answer for this. God. I would pick from 1974, Murder on the Orient Express.
What? No.
Yes. Yes, way. I would pick this, directed by Sidney Lumet, because here's why. It stars Ingrid Bergman, mother of Isabella Rossellini, and Conclave has an Agatha Christie feel to it. The way I'm describing this movie, people are probably like, what is she talking about? This makes no sense.
Yeah, I have no idea now.
And then for Emilia Perez, I would go with, I think I'm going to go with Strictly Ballroom, the Baz Luhrmann film, because I think that Emilia Perez feels to me like a little Baz Luhrmann meets a little Pedro Almodovar. But I would say maybe more successful than some Luhrmann movies and less successful for me than Almodovar. But I'm going to say Strictly Ballroom.
Okay.
Great question. I love it.
So this is fun because, again, I have not seen any of these.
I love this.
I think I found some pairings that at least sound like on paper really interesting or fun. So for Anora, screwball comedies, I thought of the movie that we've covered recently, The Awful Truth, or one that we covered a long time ago, It Happened One Night. For Conclave, I picked a different Lumet film. I went with one where a ton of men are stuck in a room trying to decide something, and I went with 12 Angry Men.
Okay.
Emilia Perez, this like really kooky but dramatic musical. I chose Holy Motors, and then I went with another one in Moulin Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
And for The Room Next Door, you know, this movie that focuses on two women and their relationship, really just talking about really serious concepts and themes, I went with Ingmar Bergman's Persona.
Ooh, that's fun.
And then Josie also asked, can you see A Real Pain pulling a path akin to Coda as a feel-good crowd pleaser with supporting actor, screenplay, and picture?
I mean, I think Josie you're right in the combination, because supporting actor in screenplay, I feel like with A Real Pain, those make sense for it to win. I just don't know, I guess, about its strength in something like picture, just because I haven't seen it yet. But I'm going to see it at New York Film Festival. But I think it's a good observation. It's really possible, especially when we don't have a clear front runner right now.
I think something pulling ahead in picture like The Life of Chuck, that would be more akin to Coda, just coming out of nowhere in that category. But I think, yeah, with that combination of nominations, at least possible wins, maybe we'll see, could definitely happen. Yeah.
Our next question comes from Linda. Do you see Emilia Perez getting noms in SAG, DGA, and PGA?
I think especially after TIFF, absolutely. But I think even before then, yes.
Yeah.
We have Jacques getting a tribute. We have the actresses winning. We have that coming in runner-up at TIFF. That's literally all three of those awards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty likely.
Our next question from Philip Bond. With no big auteurs in the director race, might this be Pedro's year?
I would love that. I think the only other one where I feel like it's possible in terms of big auteur, Steve McQueen, someone who's been celebrated. Like, we just don't know what to make of Blitz yet. But of the big names, Almodovar does stand out above the rest. We'll see. Our next question comes from Barbie Euphoric. Room Next Door, Best Picture nomination, or just the power of Huppert?
Honestly, I think a nomination could happen. I think it's down quite a bit, maybe in like an 8 through 10 slot right now. But if the performances get nominated, if we see Almodovar in screenplay again and or director, that's a good combination, if not more, for a picture nomination too.
Yeah. It is interesting, though. This does feel a little bit like Huppert's influence and her jury going with it, especially, I think, given the response to it. But also, looking at some critics' polls from the festival, it did score higher than everything else. Mm-hmm. So we might just not have our finger on the pulse of Venice and the European critics. So that's also possible. But I think it can get nominated. It just is interesting to see where it will go in other categories.
Yeah, and that comes out late December.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see once it's released how people think of it too. Our next question from Blood Wedding Atlantic. Do you think Bleecker Street has it in them to campaign Hard Truths?
I hope so. I think we don't have faith in Bleecker Street because of, you know, how they've done in the past. Mass. Everyone was talking about that movie and nothing came of it with awards. But I think that Mike Lee, you know, like we've talked about, Mike Lee might have a little bit more weight with the voters. And, you know, if this film is as good as the reviews are indicating, maybe he can get back.
Mike Lee does have a good track record with his movies, either showing up in directing or screenplay or for performances like Marianne in Secrets and Lies. So I'm hopeful. And it looks like this movie could play better to general audiences potentially. Mm-hmm. So that could also help.
Our last question we have from Kenzie. She asked us to do Smash or Pass with all of our acting predictions. I think we should spread this out across some coming episodes. We can keep playing Smash or Pass. And today, let's just do Best Actor. Because I think we also have the same five predicted.
I mean, most of them are smashes. We should probably be doing like who's not a smash at this point.
That's probably true.
Jude Law and Eden, smash. Adrian Brody.
Do you have him predicted?
Smash. Daniel Craig and Queer. No, but
Drew Starkey and Queer. Pretend he's a lead. Smash.
Absolutely.
My predicted winner, Adrian Brody, obviously smash. Mm-hmm. Do you follow him on Instagram?
No.
He has very weird energy. Like, he records these videos of himself walking around the streets of New York. And I want to run into him.
What?
Anyway, so we have Adrian Brody for The Brutalist. We both said smash. Daniel Craig for Queer. Smash.
Smash.
Easily. Mm-hmm. He's Bond. And now he's working with Luca Guadagnino. Easy. Yeah. Coleman Domingo for Sing Sing.
I would say smash.
Yeah. I was going to say that's for you. But I would say pass just because he would not be into me. That's fine.
He's also just so...
I don't want to interfere with him and his husband.
As a performance.
Have you seen the story of how he and his husband met?
Mm-mm.
Oh my God. I need to send you the video of him talking about it on Graham Norton. Aww. It's so cute.
We also have Timothée Chalamet in A Complete Unknown. I'm going to say pass here.
You are?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought I was going to be alone on this one. I'm going to pass too.
I don't know if it's like the Bob Dylan getup of it, or we're just not in a smash Timothée era.
I've never been in a smash Timothée era, but it's weird to hear you pivot.
I pivoted for a while. I definitely passed on him like last year or 2 years ago.
I think I did smash Paul Atreides when we played with Dune Part 2.
I think you did. Yeah. Okay.
Not as Dylan, though.
I think I was too scared and I said pass. Like he'd be too angry the whole time.
Meanwhile, I smashed Austin Butler in Dune Part 2. So not a concern here.
Maybe that's what it was.
Our last nominee, we have Ralph Fiennes for Conclave.
Pass. No popes, please.
Pass as this character. Yeah. I mean, a cardinal, no. But his character in A Bigger Splash, smash. Easily. English Patient, smash. Well, that was our episode on the film festivals of this year so far. Recapping Venice, Telluride, TIFF, getting ready for New York Film Festival. Next time on Oscar Wilde, we'll be discussing one of the most exciting releases of the year so far. One of the least most talked about. We will be talking about The Substance, Demi Moore and her performance. Whatever this film has in store for us, I am terrified and excited.
Margaret Qualley, who I didn't know was dating or married to Jack Antonoff.
Yes, they're married. Lana Del Rey's song Margaret is about her.
What?
Yes.
Wild.
So crazy.
Yeah, this movie comes out. It will be out when this episode airs. And I'm very intrigued, curious, worried, scared to see this one. But we'll also be getting ready for spooky season with October approaching very rapidly. Well, thank you all for listening. Feel free to rate, review, and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Oscar Wilde Pod. You can find bonus content on patreon.com/OscarWilde. And we have more content on our website, including updated nomination predictions at oscarwilde.squarespace.com. We'll be releasing new Oscar predictions every Monday and a few new categories. So keep checking that out and we will update as we get closer to the Oscars.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.